evening on tonight's show. You're going to find out, maybe even ponder the thoughts of, is the universe conscious? And what does it mean to be conscious? What does it mean to have that life force? What we say, hey, are you conscious? Is the universe conscious? You know, but some scientists believe that the universe is. So there's theories out there that the universe is like a gigantic, widely dispersed human brain. If you look at the human brain, you can see all the electronic impulses going on, all the little flashes, all the little things that make us what we are. Basically, it's like a computer. It's like a biological computer, right? You can look at it like that. So scientists have long questioned how consciousness and science mix. It's one thing that they, you know, when they're talking about now, especially artificial intelligence, and, you know, what rights that these artificial intelligent beings that we're creating are going to have. And some people believe they shouldn't have rights unless they have some kind of consciousness about them, right? Or conscious, you know, they're alive. What does it mean to be alive? So two mathematicians with not a lot to do have turned one theory into a crunchable math model. So if you know me, you know that I love my numbers. Numbers, numbers, numbers. Numbers don't lie unless the people giving you the numbers are lying. Numbers will tell you what you need to know. Mathematical equations will tell you what direction you need to go in. Just like going back in time, there's no mathematical blockades to stop that from happening. So think about that while we're talking about this, right? So an upcoming research, scientists will attempt to show the universe has consciousness. Yet, really, no matter the outcome, we'll soon learn more about what it means to be conscious and which objects around us might have a mind of their own. So, the microwave oven looking at you, a little weird, man. You buy you. Oh, I have a smart microwave oven, man. You know what I mean? People do that. I have a smart TV. Ooh, you see what goes on in Texas when all those energy companies told people to raise their thermostats with the 78? And they had the Nest thermostat all tied into their Google and everything, man. And these companies raised their thermostats, not the people, the companies. And they said they have a legal right to do it. So with these questions of who's conscious and who's not, there's also questions of liability and responsibility. And also, do you want your microwave oven to watch you, to report back? You know, I had bought one of those iRobot vacuum cleaners, right? And it has an app. So then the app, you have to give it all the permissions and basically sign your life away. The app, the robot vacuum app wanted access to my telephone and text records, man. Really? The robot vacuum cleaner wants to know who I'm calling and texting and what I'm saying to people. No, the company wants access to all my records so they can dive in and data mine and do what they want to do with it, right? And of course I didn't sign that thing up. Of course I didn't use the stupid thing, you know? So I had an AI robot that I just functioned without the app. So it wasn't as smart as it could have been, but it definitely functioned. But the bottom line is, they want you to tie yourself in to this intricate system, right? And it's much like a brain, much like being tied in. Look at the internet. Look how it connects, who it's connected to. People on their social media. People can't even separate themselves from their phones. They got it in their hand. They used to carry their pocket. Most people carry their hands now. They walk around. You know, it's something that, you know, because humans love to be distracted and also addicted. So you have the best of all worlds. And the cell phone was designed specifically to capture people. And it is what it did, right? So anyway, here we go. The basic definition of consciousness. intentionally leaves a lot of questions unanswered. It's the normal mental condition of the waking state of humans, characterized by the experience of perceptions, thoughts, feelings, awareness of the external world, and often in humans, but not necessarily in other animals, self-awareness. You are aware of yourself. So, of course, cats are aware of themselves. You know, they lick their little paws. They eat their little num-nums. They do their little thing. Torture some mice or something while they're at it, right? Dogs are aware of themselves. They know that they like to sniff butts. They know that they like to sniff the same butt for, I don't know, forever, as long as they can sniff it. That's dogs. So you think that all animals aren't kind of self-aware? I think if they're out there trying to survive, they're definitely aware of themselves, you know, or fighting for survival. They're aware of themselves. Then we can get even into viruses and things like that. What's aware, if you want to talk about aware, but thoughts, feelings, awareness of the external world, I don't know. That's a very interesting thing around spirit, on what's a spirit, right? So they're leaving spirit out of this because these are scientists that don't function in a spiritual world. And until they do, they're not going to know a lot of things, you know, that they should be knowing, the work that they're doing. I think that you have to, you know, include outside the box ideas into your theories and into the future of what you do. If you're in science, right? Or you're just some closed off person working on your math, your little equations, you know, and then never really experiencing these true experiments and or, you know, the evolvement of them, right? Anyway. However, one loophole of this knowledge gap is that we can't exhaustively say other organisms and even inanimate objects don't have a consciousness. Humans relate to animals and can imagine, say, dogs and cats have some amount of consciousness because we see their facial expressions and how they appear to make decisions. Blah, blah, blah. And I just mentioned that, right? I jumped the gun. Sorry. But just because we don't relate to rocks, the ocean, or the night sky, and speak for yourself, because I certainly do, that isn't the same as proving those things don't have a consciousness, right? This is where the philosophical stance called panpsychism comes into play. All right. Let's see. It's also where physics enter the picture. Some scientists have posited that the thing we think of as consciousness is made of micro-scale quantum physics, basically events and other spooky actions at a distance, right? What Einstein described, somehow fluttering inside our brains and generating conscious thoughts. I had done a show not long ago on unreality, or is reality real, and questioning reality itself, right? Or are you making up reality as you go along, and everything that you experience is something that you created? So, ha! The free will conundrum. One of the leading minds in physics, 2020 Nobel laureate and black hole pioneer Roger Penrose, has written extensively about quantum mechanics as a suspected vehicle of consciousness. In 1989, he wrote a book called The Emperor's New Mind, in which he claimed that the human consciousness is a non-algorithmic and a product of quantum effects. Now, if that's true, and in my paranormal investigations, I've come upon the whole quantum tunneling and thinking about how beings, spirits, whatever, what you want, can move around from one place to another. And now we as humans are starting to get into the quantum tunneling and use it and do experiments at this very early stage of development as beings, right? So, okay. Let's quickly break down the statements that have been made. What does it mean for a human consciousness to be algorithmic? An algorithm is simply a series of predictable steps to reach an outcome. And in the study of philosophy, this idea plays a big part in questions about free will versus determination, right? Or determinism. So let's say you live in a block universe and everything has already happened. There are no choices that you're going to make that aren't understood and known already because they've already been made. And you may think you have free will because you're making these choices, but you don't know because you can only make the one choice, you know? Or you say, oh, I should have done this, or I could have done that, or I should order the meatball parm instead of the eggplant, yeah, whatever. You think that something better would happen from that choice. Anyway, all that stuff would be predetermined. And you're not writing your own history. You're just living it like watching a movie, right? You're being stuck, basically. So are our brains simply cranking out math-like processes that can be telescoped in advance? Or is something wild happening that allows us true free will, meaning the ability to make meaningful, different decisions that affect our lives? So within philosophy itself, the study of free will dates back to centuries, at least centuries, but the overlap with physics is much newer. And what Penrose claimed as in the Emperor's New Mind is that consciousness isn't strictly causal because of the tiniest level, it's a product of unpredictable quantum phenomena and that they don't conform to classic physics. So, of course, the micro world of physics does the complete opposite from the macro world of physics. You know, I have a supposition that there's also a mega world of physics that is opposite from the world that we're in, and then so on and so on, and also smaller than micro, right? So, but in quantum tunneling, this is where they're able to move particles many miles from one place to another instantaneously, and those particles react together when they're moved. When they twist one, the other one turns the other's opposite direction, they interact together. There is a connection between the two particles. There's a connection from miles and miles and miles apart. So what does that tell you? It tells you that we don't know anything about science, nothing. And the people that say that they do are lying, or they're using their own, well, it could be this, it could be that, or, oh, you know, when people quote Stephen Hawking, I really hate it. I hate it. You know why I hate it? And I'm not going to knock the guy because of all he had went through, and he's dead. But I don't think he was anything really. And, you know, he had basically continued other people's work in theory. So you can hang out with a bunch of potheads looking at the sky and stars and hear tons of theory. You hear truckloads of theory, you know? What does that mean? I mean, you know, listen to what the guy said. Much of it was, you know, doom and gloom for mankind. But I think also because of his physical condition and what he was suffering through, I think that took a toll on him, which, you know, the information he was coming out with, it was slanted, right? Anyway. I don't get into individuals and rock stars and whatever of physics and science, you know. I get into people who have an understanding for the true meaning of scientific research and not conforming to systems or ideas, but thinking outside the box, right? That's what this show is all about anyway. So here we go. So all this background information, right? Your understanding, okay, where physics come together with consciousness and you know, who's alive, who isn't alive, and what's considered alive. You know, I remember this movie. I hate comparing the movies, man, but, you know, the robot got struck by lightning and became alive. And they were trying to prove the whole movie if he's alive or what does it mean to be alive and that type of thing, right? I feel that about a lot of people. Are they alive? What kind of level are they existing on? Come on. You know who I'm talking about out there. You know people. You know, wondering. All right. So here we go. You ready? In physics, scientists could learn key things from a study of consciousness as a quantum effect. This is where we rejoin today's researchers like Johannes Kleiner, the mathematician and theoretical physicist at the Munich Center for Mathematical Philosophy, and Sean Tull, mathematician at the University of Oxford. Have you ever met mathematicians? My math teacher in high school was named Mr. Book. I was already about 6'4", I think, at that point, man. And he was like 5', and I think he just hated me because of my height. I didn't equate. I don't know. You know what? It may sound funny. You run into people that have a thing, like short little dudes who have a thing. Why do you think those short little guys go out and buy those big pickup trucks, man, with the tall tires, you know? You know why? You know why? Because they're compensating. Mathematically compensating. But it doesn't make Mr. Winky any bigger, no matter what kind of tires you put on your truck, man. So anyway, these people, automatically, if I get the wind that you don't like me, I'm going to start provoking you with humor. And it's my natural defense. Not even a defense. Let's call it a melting of atmospheres. You know, trying to bond something so something else doesn't explode at some point. So, and then mathematicians are very angry, irritated people. They are people you can make them mad about anything. And all you got to do is talk to them for 3 seconds to know what, because they wear all of their angst and all their crap emotions, not just mathematicians, but people. People who have issues wear it all on their sleeve. You only have to talk to them for a few seconds to know what the hell they're all about. And then once you have enough ammunition, boo-hoo, you're in that world. You're in that world. So anyway, this reminds me of him. Upset and angry. Kleiner and Tull are following Penrose's example in both his 1989 book and a 2004 paper where he detailed his belief that our brains' microprocessors can be used to model things about the whole universe. The resulting theory is called Integrated Information Theory, IIT, right? Sounds a lot like the internet, doesn't it? And it's an abstract, highly mathematical form of the philosophy we've been reviewing. So let me cut in. Your computer has applications that it runs. It's got functions. It starts. It goes to sleep. It does all kinds of stuff, right? It has all these different files in a certain order. Obviously, there's an order to everything, because if there wasn't, it would just be a blurt all over your screen, you know. But you have separate files, and you know, most people know what's in their files and what's there, whatever. People are much the same way. We are separate machines. We have our separate files. You know, we are much stronger than computers in many ways, you know. Maybe not as information rich. You know, but then we use these computers for that. You know, some people use them too much, and if they can't think of something, they look it up, or they Google it, and people are becoming dumber because of that. You know, if I can't remember something straight away, I don't look it up. I trigger my brain into remembering it, and that's really a good exercise to do. It's a good mental exercise, but I'm not going to knock computers because it's a wealth of information, as long as you're getting information from, legitimate sources. But a wealth of information, there's no other way to go, you know, when it comes to, access there are people all over the world now that have access to this, these materials that they never did before. And this is recent. All this is recent. People being able to read ideas on what's out there in the world, other people, how they're living and that type of thing, a sharing of communities and worlds, right? All of that. So imagine a consciousness of all of that, all of these individuals coming together, moving one specific direction, right? So in IIT, consciousness is everywhere, but it accumulates in places where it's needed to help glue together different related systems. This means the human body is jam-packed with a ton of systems that must interrelate, right? So there's a lot of consciousness, you know, or phi, as the quantity is known in the IIT, that can be calculated. So think about all the parts of the brain that work together. You know, for example, to form a picture, right? When you see something and everything that has to happen to get to that point of your perception, you know? So the revolutionary thing in IIT isn't related to the human brain, though. Its consciousness isn't biological at all, but rather is simply this value phi that can be calculated if you know a lot about the complexity of what you are studying. So in your brain, if your brain has, you know, almost countless interrelated systems, then the entire universe must have virtually infinite ones, right? And if that's where consciousness accumulates, then the universe must have a lot of phi. So you're basically coming up with a reasoning of awareness and saying, if the human brain can do this, then we've got this over here that's much larger and more complex, right? Integrated. So the theory consists of a very complicated algorithm that, when applied to a detailed mathematical description of a physical system, it provides information about whether the system is conscious or not, and what is conscious of. So if there is an isolated pair of particles floating around somewhere in space, they will have some rudimentary form of consciousness if they interact in the correct way. So Kleiner and Tall are working on turning IIT into this complex mathematical algorithm, right? Setting down the standards that can be used to examine how conscious things operate. So think about the classic philosophical comment, I think before there I am, right? Or I think therefore I am. Then, I'll have that whiskey. That's also a consciousness type of thing. So imagine two geniuses turning that into a workable formula when you substitute in 100 different number of values and end up with your specific I am answer. So the next step is to actually crunch the numbers and then grapple with the moral implications of the hypothetically conscious universe. So interesting stuff, right? I like it because it brings people closer to even a spiritual answer, you know. All too often, scientists have dismissed, you know, even the paranormal. So they kind of don't even acknowledge it. And now they're being forced to acknowledge it because things are coming to light that are unexplainable. You know, so it's different. I'll tell you, when I started doing my ghost show and I was playing it on local cable in Ithaca, New York, I had these physicists from Cornell contact me, you know, an email. And the guy's like, you know, I've been watching your shows for a while now. I see the equipment that you use. He's like, it's not possible for you to be getting these spikes and what goes on in your equipment, you know, unless, you know, we're faking it or something, right? And, you know, I always invite people to come along if they have any kind of even. I love the doubters. I have a real fondness of watching people run out of the haunted house who are terrorized and screaming because it's the sadistic side of me. I'm sorry, but I've had the biggest and the best. I don't believe in ghosts. I'll go in there. There's no problem. It's just an empty building. It's stupid. Really? Why don't you come along with us? And then those are the people within, 15, 16 minutes. I got to get out of here. Oh, I'm hot. I'm cold. I'm sweating. I don't know what to do. I see things. I hear things. Bah. I think it's time that you go to 7-Eleven and get a Slurpee and calm down, man. You know, just take a breath, calm down. It's going to be all right. Not really. They're going to follow you home and haunt you for good. Anyway, I don't know how the hell we got on that one. That's my crazy brain. That's my crazy brain growing off in a whole nother direction. Woohoo. So how about this? Can our brains help prove the universe is conscious? And this is much like the article I read previous, But I really like to focus on the conscious part of, of being aware and perception. And everybody's perception is different, Everybody's perception is different. If when the stuff that you see, the things that you experience, they, even if you were a large group of people and you witness an event, you're going to get a large group of stories. All the stories are not going to be the same. You're going to have, maybe they're going to have similar parts, but not the same, because it comes down to perception and what people are paying attention to as something is going on. And, your attention span versus your ability to keep knowledge in your brain, right? Information, for God's sakes. All right. But how about this? How about the ghost in the machine, man? As individuals, we feel that we know what consciousness is because we experience it every day, right? It's that intimate sense of personal awareness we carry around with us and the accompanying feeling of ownership and control over our thoughts, emotions, and memories. So then you have to come into all kinds of questions. Do we control our own emotions? Other people can make you upset. If you get upset and you get angry, you're not in control of your emotions. Anger is a secondary emotion, right? So There are manipulators of those senses and of those feelings and of those things. But are you aware? Well, you wake up, you use the bathroom, you make coffee, whatever you do, right? That's what I do. So in that order, usually. So it really comes down to, okay, I'm aware. So is the cockroach up crawling up the wall. I don't have cockroaches, but you know what I'm saying. There are beings that know they've got to go out there and do their business or they're not going to survive. So I think, again, it comes down to survival, right? So science has not yet reached a consensus, though, on the nature of consciousness, which has really important implications about the belief in free will and our approach to the study of the human mind. So beliefs about consciousness can be roughly divided into these two camps. There are those who believe consciousness is like a ghost in the machine in our brains, meriting special attention and study in its own right. And there are those who challenge this, pointing out that we can call consciousness as just another output generated backstage by our efficient neural machinery. So do you think this neural machinery came about by accident? Do you think that creatures would evolve with brains like this just from, even if it's a million years of evolution? What would the reasoning be? Because certainly you have humans that need to survive, You need to go out and get food, have your families, people procreate, and they do that type of thing. And especially early man in those rough conditions, it doesn't add up mathematically. You know, you're talking about an extraordinary chance that this life, a human being, is going to exist and survive, you know, from what? From some creature who crawled out of the sea to evolve in what people are now? It doesn't make any sense. I don't care if there's 1 million years. I don't care if there's 10 million years. It doesn't make any sense, you know, for people to have evolved in such a way that, you know, they believe they have mental telepathy. They believe that they're all connected through a whole network that goes beyond your computer. But the computer is a good analogy of what people are, you know, good analogy, right? So, but in the past 30 years, neuroscientific research has been gradually moving away from the first camp about the ghost in the machine, right? Using research in cognitive neuropsychology and hypnosis. They have their recent paper, which argued in favor of the latter position, that, you know, people and their perception and everything that you are is truly within this neural network, right? Even though this seems to undermine the compelling sense of authorship that we have over our own consciousness, because people don't want to believe it. That's simple, right? In fact, people have a whole belief system that's separate from a brain. They believe in God. They believe in angels. They believe in all kinds of prayer, you know, praying. Gonna pray to God. God is one individual who's out there and, you know, watching over everybody, listening to everybody, doing all this other stuff, right? But in the same sense, is pain and suffering and terrible things that happen every second on this earth to somebody, to some creature, to something, right? There's great suffering on this planet. So, you know, when you throw the God in there, and it's a loving God, well, why would some loving God want all of his creations to suffer? Well, that's pretty nasty. You know what I mean? So when it comes to science, you try to divide these things, right? But you can explain a lot that religion has to say with technology and technology that we don't even have yet, you know? And I think that we can look at the roots of every creature on this planet and look at the roots of the DNA and understand that it only has four elements, A, C, T, and G. And with that, those four, you can create any code you want to create genes, whatever you want. And if you had sophisticated enough equipment, you can create whatever you wanted just by basically typing it up, you know? So, all right. Is consciousness special, right? You think you're special? Yeah. Your mom told you you're special growing up. Our experience of consciousness places us firmly in the driver's seat with a sense that we're in control of our psychological world. But seen from an objective perspective, it's not all clear that this is how consciousness functions. And there's still much debate about the fundamental nature of consciousness itself. And it's also taken into account, we are not in control of our world. We are limited in our choices. We are a limited species. We need to breathe the air, drink the water, and eat the food, or we die. So, I mean, we are also limited when it comes to where we can go. I mean, we can't even go to the depths of our oceans. We can't even go to parts of the South Pole, North Pole, because it's inaccessible. We can't even go into space. We're limited, right? Limited, so. All right, so here we go. One reason for this, the consciousness itself in the debate, is that many scientists have adopted a dualist position over the nature of consciousness. Dualism is a philosophical view that draws a distinction between the mind and the body, even though consciousness is generated by the brain. A part of the body. Dualism claims that the mind is distinct from our physical features and that consciousness cannot be understood through the study of the physical brain itself. And speaking of the brain, do you know that your heart has its own brain? The heart has its own neural network that functions very much the same way the brain does, you know? And you know how smart your body is when it comes to nutrients and how it moves things around and your genes and then how things are made up where, you know, your brain knows exactly where or what nutrients go to your brain and your heart and your whatever. I mean, it's an amazing system. Amazing system, what a human body is and what it does, right? So, all right, so it's easy to see why we believe this to be the case while every other process in your human body ticks and pulses away with our oversight. There is something uniquely transcendental about our experience of consciousness. It's no surprise that we've treated consciousness as something special, distinct from the automatic systems that keep us breathing and digesting. They want to say it, but they can't because they're scientists and you know, scientists of yore back in the day were also spiritual, and they tried bringing those two aspects together, and then they went separate ways. They were mocked and not accepted as real scientists, which is funny because you don't have one without the other, obviously. Anyway, a growing body of evidence from a field of cognitive neuroscience, which studies biological processes underpinning cognition, challenges this view. Such studies draw attention to the fact that many psychological functions are generated and carried out entirely outside of our subjective awareness by a range of fast, efficient, non-conscious brain systems. How complicated is that? Imagine assembling something like that. Right? Imagine you are the creator and you're assembling this kind of brain system so you can function. Right? Tell me it just happened by accident. So consider, for example, how effortlessly we regain consciousness each morning after losing it the night before, or how with no deliberate effort, we instantly recognize the understand shapes, colors, patterns, and faces we encounter. But see, because you're sleeping, does that mean you're not conscious? I mean, yeah, you could say it's unconscious, you know, but is there really such a thing? If you are conscious, think about that. So consider that we don't actually experience how our own perceptions are created or how thoughts and sentences are produced or how we recall our memories or how we control our muscles to walk or our tongues to talk or, you know, simply put, basically we don't generate our, you know, or control our thoughts, feelings, actions. We just seem to become aware of them, which obviously, if you're going to choose, hey, I've got to go to this place and get a coffee, you know, whatever, and you're choosing how many sugars you want in there and you know, you want what kind of milk you want, or if you don't want milk, right, some oat milk or something like that, that you're not making your own decisions, that you're just functioning and you're aware of the functioning without having any kind of understanding of what you're doing. You know, or you do understand what you're doing, but you have no control over what you're doing, right? So a recent paper argues that consciousness involves no separate independent psychological process distinct from the brain itself, just as there's no additional function to digestion that exists separately from physical workings of the gut. But you see, but the system is input, process, output. The system understands about digestion. You don't have to do too much. Eat the right stuff, maybe. Maybe there's things you don't want to mix together, you know, upset your stomach. Chinese food and Mexican food, probably not a good idea. But people do, you know. Sushi and pizza, maybe. But people make their own choices, which brings you to a bathroom, right? But does your body need to think, okay, how am I going to digest this food? Where am I going to put the nutrients? I just talked about the whole railway of nutrients, right? And how smart the body is aside from you. It's not you making these decisions. It's not you telling yourself to breathe. It's an automatic function. It's something that is in your system. It's in your brain. It is you but you're not causing it to happen. You can control your own breathing. You know, if you stop breathing, you know what happens there, right? But you breathe all night long. You breathe all day long. It's a function that your body tells you to. So, all right. While it's clear that both the experience and content of the consciousness are real, scientists argue that there are basically secondary phenomena based on the mechanisms of the physical brain itself. In other words, our subjective experience of consciousness is real, but the functions of control and ownership we attribute to that experience is not. So when they wrote that, was that real for them? Or was it their bodies who just decided to do it and they're on for the ride, right? That's why I don't like boats. Future study of the brain, right? Our position is neither obvious nor intuitive, but we contend that continuing to place consciousness in the driver's seat above and beyond the physical workings of the brain and attributing cognitive functions to it risks confusion and delaying a better understanding to human psychology and behavior. No, it doesn't. It just knocks back their theory, right? Because these guys firmly don't believe in spiritualness. They don't believe in that consciousness is actually spirit, you know, or is anything else but just, you know, a neurological system, the workings of the brain and how you perceive things, right? To better align psychology with the rest of the natural sciences, and to be consistent with how we understand and study processes like digestion and respiration, we favor a perspective change. We should redirect our efforts to studying the non-conscious brain and not the functions previously attributed to consciousness. So isn't it funny that, you know, here these guys are very obvious for psychologists and psychiatrists trying to make their case. They're not very smart. They're very obvious that they want to just shut down the other research because, you know, they don't believe in it. They don't believe it's real and whatever. What's wrong with people doing research in that area and these guys doing research in this area? You know what's wrong with it? Because they think that the other stuff shouldn't exist because it mocks what they're doing. They think what they're doing is right and that's the only answer. That kind of arrogance and ego does not take you on a path of happiness, man, and also seeking out any kind of knowledge either. You know, it gets you, you know, it brings into an adversarial game and an area in science that shouldn't be adversarial. It should be a working harmony, right? But it's interesting when I read these articles that these groups do, and it's just, wow. They just don't believe in it. People didn't believe in Nikola Tesla. They mocked him and all the other stuff. And, you know, how many inventors, you know, over the years, over the centuries that were mocked, especially back in the day when they were bringing in spiritual aspects to their scientific research. And then it was mocked and it was separated. And, you know, of course, you have a whole religious system that's designed for power and control, where they don't want you to have any original ideas. So they also separated things, right? But what is it, you know, where do you find yourself in every day? I mean, your conscious life. And what is consciousness? And really, it hasn't been answered. And this is something that they're researching, which is kind of funny, actually, because I think that if you're self-aware and you're functioning, that's pretty much conscious, right? Especially if you have a purpose. But some people, they have no purpose. Some people are retired. They don't do anything. They kind of just wake up and live their lives or look at the news and, you know, yell at their TV and whatever, man, and go to sleep again, right? Some people get up and they go out and build bridges or they do things for humanity. I mean, you have all levels of life that function on different planes, right? So are those people all conscious? Of course they are. Are their dogs conscious? Of course they are. So, but it comes down to what level. What level, and then what does it mean, ultimately, to how we treat other creatures, other beings, other things that are conscious, right? I mean, do we treat them differently? Are plants conscious? Are plants aware of themselves? You know, are they just reacting to the environment when they grow? There are some plants that are very aware. Some not so, but same for people. So these are all things that we need to explore in the future, but I think it's very, very, very interesting stuff. Anyway, I'm conscious of the fact that I've got to end the show right now. And also the fact that my coffee cup is empty. Why is my coffee cup always empty? I don't know. But I'm conscious of that. I will talk to you guys next week on this here show, United Public Radio Network, UPRNTalkRadio.com, 107.5 New Orleans, 104.7 in Pass Christian. I'll see you next week. Que pasa, que pasa, que pasa, yeah!